I don't know what the six is, but I know it's a thing.
Why is it called the six?
Yeah, why is it called the six? Eglinton and 401 East End, where past Markham Road, where all the pretty girls are sleeping.
Yeah. Is Peach Street, is that in Toronto? Is Courtney from Hooters on Peach Street?
It's got the same name as somewhere from around here.
Canadian Patois as well.
Scarborough, yes. He's talking about Scarborough. And I was like, what, Scarborough? Like,
I'm a big fan of Canada.
From Canada Land, this is The Imposter. I'm Aaliyah Pabani. On today's episode, oh my god, they're having sex! Oh my gosh! No. This is what happens within our culture.
The background, like, that's like a texture.
Artist on the beach, airbrushing like hot butts on like a t-shirt.
Today, we're not gonna go around Drake. We're gonna go through him. Dancer in Rihanna and Drake's video for Work that was shot at the Real Jerk in Toronto, right?
Yes. I had a lot of fun on set. Specs was DJing and he's hype. So I felt like I was at a dance hall jam. So I was jamming. Like I was going off. I was sweating. The room was hot and I like had to get tissue multiple times because I was just like, oh my God. Because he was just playing tracks. Before he even dropped Rihanna's song, he was just playing tracks because they were just getting extra B-roll stuff. Cool. To me, it's like I grew up listening to dancehall because of my older sister. So I know about the culture. I know what happens within the culture. And it's basically what you saw in the music video. It's a lot of bubbling. It's a lot of dancing on different things. And
what's bubbling?
I hate you.
I know. But no, I don't know.
But right now, I'm going to plead in ignorance. Okay. So here's a little lesson. So what you see in the video as what we call bubbling is when a guy and a girl are dancing together. It could be guy behind girl. It could be girl guy facing each other. It could very well be guy in front of girl. We use props, chairs. We use the wall. We use the floor sometimes. It's one of those things where if the wine and if this is so funny that I'm describing this right now.
You're doing well. You're doing well.
If the wine, well, which is also called the circular motion of the hips, yes. if the wine is so sweet and I decide, I have told my students that sweetness is enjoyment. If you are enjoying the wine so much that you need to include props with it in order to be able to handle, as we like to say within the treaty culture, handle the wine, that's basically how you would describe what bubbling is.
I'm not sure I understand that. Okay,
what are these, damn it.
What are these props? Okay, what are you doing with them?
Okay, so the girl can have her hands on the wall while she is bubbling the guy. The guy can have his back towards the wall as a way to stabilize himself because the last thing you want to know is that you're going to push the girl or you're going to fall off balance as the guy. That means, quote unquote, that you can't handle her. Essentially in our culture, you know? And then, you know, some girls like to sometimes throw in some acrobatic situations into the whole thing so they can have their legs wrapped around a guy And I understand. I know a lot of people in just watching the video were just like, oh my God, they're having sex. Oh my gosh. No, 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 no. This is what happens within our culture. You're now getting a very good look of what it means to be jamming two guys and two girls, or a guy and a girl, whatever it is, in a club. I'm not going home with you. You may not get my number. In carnival culture, it's called you're teefing, you could teef a wine and go. So it's not necessarily about the fact that, like, oh, okay, I need to dance up on you and now I'm going to go home and sleep with you. It has nothing to do with mm-hmm. it. It's the enjoyment factor.
Like, the thing is already done. It's yeah. not like it's a contract for some later thing.
It's just like, okay,
we
now
did the thing. We danced together. What do you,
you
how is the sex going to be better than this?
Exactly. And then sometimes it's a good indication to know whether or not he's good or not. You know, if a guy can bubble, then you're like, okay, yeah. so it's something to look forward to. They wanted all of that thrown into the video. And to me, it was seen. By the time you got to the end of it, you're just like, oh, yeah, this feels like a basement party. This feels like a Sean Paul Get Busy circa mm-hmm. 2000s kind of vibe, you mm-hmm. know, where it was just like, it just felt so good at the 12th hour, 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th hour, maybe not as nice. 20th hour, probably not as nice, but, you know.
How did they keep you going for that amount of time?
We did take some liquid courage okay. To kind of help. And the bartender was pouring out the liquor. So then people just took the drinks. We weren't really sense. Supposed to.
Yeah,
but
yeah. You got to like pad your paycheck a little.
You know, where it's just like, I'm not really getting a lot for this. So I'm going to take this drink.
It's like taking a stapler or something.
You know, like the office is like, you're giving me $5 an hour. It's fine. I'm going to take these copy books. I'm going to take the photocopy machine. Like you're going to take the extra stuff that you wouldn't necessarily get.
Yeah.
But it was fun. It was a really long day. It was, I think, the longest time I've ever spent on set.
Oh, really? Even
20 hours.
In all of these other music videos, yep. you've never spent this long. Did they pay you by the hour? Did they? No? By
no.
the job.
You just get paid for the job,
right.
unfortunately.
As however long it takes, it takes.
Yeah. They disclose the amount and then they disclose the audition day. So everybody auditioned. And because it was open up to the public, that also made it very difficult. So you got everybody and their mother at this audition. And they have no idea what dance hall is. They have no idea about the culture. They don't really have much respect for it. So in my head, why are you going to go to the video?
Mm.
You know?
It's just like some experience.
Yeah.
And were they all dancers or was
no.
it just general?
There was a dance call and a general call, which was basically all grouped into one.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of dancers, a lot of people went out. To me, in my head, there was a lot of people that should have been in the video that didn't get in it. There were people that, and no shade to them, that were in the video that I kind of questioned just because of the fact that I'm like, are you sure you do dance hall? And not like the commercial version that you might see in a Justin Bieber video. Like, this is the Rihanna version. Like, she's from Barbados. Like, you're getting the real authentic version of what dance hall is. Basically, it was unfortunate the amount that we got paid. However, that aside, I still had fun on set.
Mm-hmm.
I just pray that when big budget things like this come into the city from big names like them, that we get the same pay that the crew does. Through the grapevine, I've heard that, you know, Drake really wanted Rihanna to shoot this video in Toronto. So they shot the version there, but then I guess he was able to convince her to come to Toronto to shoot it, which was amazing and it was great. And X was the director and all of that is fantastic. But then why do you insist on saying that the talent that is going to technically make the video,
mm-hmm.
if you were to take all of that talent out, you would get the first version of the work video,
yeah.
which is just the two of you bubbling each other, dancing.
The boring part.
Exactly. And then you get to see the other version when you're like, yo, this is hype. But is it hype when you know that nobody really got paid well to do the video? I don't even know if they know how much we got paid. As dancers, we tend to be like, well, it's the artist. How come the artists don't know? And people are like, oh, how did Drake and Rihanna let this happen? I'm like, you can't really say they let it happen. You're more looking at the production company. Whoever decided to do the numbers that said, yeah. this is what I want to do. This is what I want to be able to bring forward.
Right.
And we want to do it for the cheapest cost ever. You're still saving money by doing it in Canada because you're bringing in States people.
Right, their dollars worth
their dollar,
more.
Your dollar's worth right. more. So technically, if you even paid us $300, you still would have got a discount. If you paid us $500, you still would have got a discount.
Mm-hmm.
I understand you were going on quantity, but it would have felt nicer if you respected the dancers and the scene that it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you just needed extras to be bodies, then you can pay them the $200.
Yeah, it's like, it's not like you guys were extras in that. Like watching mm-hmm. those two videos back to back is like the difference between being on in a like really great party that you want to be at versus being on like a bad date. That's boring. Yeah. Like, it was just, I was like, why did you even include that second part? Like the only good part of that second part was Rihanna's shirt. So I was also thinking about when I tried to look for your videos mm-hmm. that you danced in, I couldn't because you weren't credited on them.
Oh, yeah. I've never been credited for any music videos that I've been in. Say, for instance, in like the Drake and Rihanna video, the work video, I was fortunate enough to be one of the dancers that was seen. Like the last clip, the slow-mo mm-hmm. at the very end, you get a chance to kind of catch my face. And I was like, okay, well, at least I'm actually can say that I was really in the video. And it's funny, anytime people are like, oh, were you in you were in the Drake and Rihanna video? They're like, but do I actually see you? And I was like, look at the video and tell me if you see me then. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all I can say to people. You do all this work. And then the editor comes in and fucks shit up. And then you have no idea whether or not you're even going to be in the final product. By the end of it, you might see half of an eye and a hand. And you're just like, well, I can't really put that on my reel. As a dancer and as an artist, you had to figure out other ways to help invent yourself. Because mm-hmm. like you'll have the most amazing dancers be on tour with Missy Elliott, be on tour with Rihanna, be in Beyonce's music video, and be teaching classes like I am at my studio once all of that is done. Like mm-hmm. it's hard because a lot of people will chase after these jobs with these artists for their 1.5 second of fame. And it's funny when everyone's like, oh my God, a music video, I want to be in it. I'm like, really? Are you sure about that? Are you ready for 15-hour days on set? Are you ready to be told, do it again, do it again, do it again, do it again, do it again for hours and hours on end? To go there, stand there, stand there, fix your hair, do, like, it's literally like, the amount of work that goes into it, it doesn't ever really justify that you're like, oh my God, I was in this video.
So how sponsorship usually works in the podcast world is that you start a podcast, you get a bunch of listeners, and then you try to find a sponsor so that you can keep doing it. With The Imposter, things didn't really go down that way. Without knowing anything about me, FreshBooks decided to sponsor this podcast for the next 7 months, which is pretty huge. It's going to allow us to spend the next 7 months concentrating on building a new podcast instead of trying to find money. And we appreciate that. FreshBooks does stuff like this because they're a company that's committed to empowering freelancers and small companies to do great things. In the upcoming episodes, I'll be talking more about their features like cloud accounting and painless billing. But for now, I just wanted to say thank you, FreshBooks. Everybody else should go to freshbooks.com/theimposter and try using FreshBooks for free for 30 days. Do it. Do it right now. So you played with a bunch of indie bands like the Arcade Fire, Gentleman Reg, and the Hidden Cameras, and then you were asked to contribute to Drake's newest album, Views. I gotta know, do you actually like Drake?
I didn't get it for a while, for sure. And then second or third or like a few years in, I was listening to some of it. I think that Drake's sort of kind of quirky take on things, Drake's like a different kind of rapper. Like, he has things about him that don't make him like mainstream American rappers.
What are those things, do you think?
Like, he has a very sort of like insistent, reedy kind of voice, and all the production was murky to the point of like not being able to hear some of it, you know. Mm-hmm. That's the 40 Drake thing that cut through like really well, because people could hear everything he was saying, and it was totally different than anything that was hitting mainstream radio. His lyrics are like a blog. He's kind of making a real story out of his own life. Like, that's like a blog thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's all recorded in Toronto, and it's all people from Toronto working on it. When it was like, you want to work on it? I was like, oh, that's cool. You're doing it here, you know? The process of 40 is to, like, get a large bulk of material together. So
who's
I actually
40? Just for our listeners.
Oh, sorry. 40 is the main producer of that record, and also could be argued like the main creator of the Drake sound with Drake. Mm-hmm. He's the guy who's been there from the beginning. And the guy who also ostensibly hired me and worked with me on this record. Forty has a very particular way of doing things where he likes to get a large amount of material together, and then he is the grand orchestrator of chopping it all up, making it all sound weird, and giving in his raw material. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like I sat down and painstakingly wrote a song with Drake. It was more like, due to all the original material that has been spit into the engine on this side, coming out on the other side, you will hear like, oh, there's a bit of cello there, there's a bit of that, there's a bit of there. And so they, you know, gave me the percentage on that song, you know.
What an elegant metaphor.
Well, yeah, but it kind of works.
When I saw that you had done string arrangements for the record, I was surprised, kind of, because I didn't necessarily hear strings right away. If you could just, like, listen to this clip and tell me if this is the part.
Sure. If I can tell. But money can't buy happiness, jelly talking truthful. But I'm happiest when I can buy what I want, get high when I want. Yeah. That's right.
There.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's it.
Yeah. I think so.
Nice.
Yeah, it's funny how I hear that better on the laptop than I do on big speakers.
Oh.
Because it pokes it out.
Right.
I really like doing string arrangements for hip-hop and R&B. So you'll have, like, a texture here and a bit of a figure, sort of an idea, and then there'll be, like, a melody of some kind.
Okay, wait, hold on. What's a texture?
And
what's
texture would be, like, if the strings went like this, and then you're like, oh, I'm getting a vibe from these, you know? Just, like, a chord or in the background, like, that's, like, a texture. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, a figure or a kind of a riff might be something where, like, they're going, la da 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 da, and it's like, da da da, you know, kind of thing. You know? It's like, ooh. There's that thing that kind of sticks out a bit. But, yeah, actually listening to playbacks was fun there. And in there somewhere is electric cello, too. And people were coming in the room and was like, whoa, what is that? I'm like, I don't know. It's amazing. It's like, never even heard it myself. It was super fun. Like, we had a good time, you know, finding cool sounds and just shooting off stuff. And so that's the kind of environment it was.
Right.
And I found everything those guys did, you know, be it sometimes a touch disorganized, maybe the rhythm would be not disorganized, but chaotic.
In what way?
Well, I mean, when the record came out, I mean, 18 hours before it came out, it wasn't done. Like, that's mind-boggling. But I kind of feel like they were really working, like, oh my God, we got to get this done. We said it was going to be April, and it's April, and we're not done yet. Like, yeah, when they first dropped the credits the day of, they, you know, misspelled my last name. I didn't take it personally. I was just like, hey, yo, my name's spelled wrong. They're like, oh, shit, sorry. You know, everything's going off a cliff at the end. It's like, get it out, boom. It's like, oh, we forgot that one guy's name. Crap, you know. I think the thing that was notable was that it was like most of my other sessions. Considering that I've had probably some experiences that are, like, kind of shitty, this sort of tacky, like, self-important kind of bullshit that you see going on, and it was happening at stuff I was doing that was, like, a million levels lower as far as, you know, career things going on. It's interesting, you know.
Then at that level, it was just completely
not
like that, no posturing and stuff like that.
Posturing, that's the word. There was no posturing. There was more of the attitude like, ha, isn't this great? It's going to come out. It's going to be huge. It's amazing. It's like, that was the attitude, you know? Like, it's just great that this is happening. Is it great? It's great. You know, it's like, that was, but that's the way it should be, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. You should feel like you're just having a great time doing the things you love to do.
Yeah, they should feel happy about it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Okay, so I heard this story about this Toronto artist who sometimes goes by the name Mango Peeler. And he's this really prolific artist who works with everything from like collage to projection to fashion, food, screen printing, and something he calls
performative athletics. So apparently he made this t-shirt with Aaliyah's face printed on it in this like spiral pattern. The singer, not me, obviously. Somehow Drake sees the t-shirt and buys one. And this guy, Mango Peeler, ends up going to Drake's studio. And Drake buys him $10,000 life insurance. I checked it out, and this actually really happened. I was reading this interview with him on the Toronto Public Library's website, and he talks about doing shirts for Drizzy Drake, driving in a black Range Rover with his bodyguards at 3 a.m. so they can give me a stack of cash to help pay for my life insurance. The thing about it is, like, I heard a lot about Drake being kind of notoriously generous, if that's something that can be said about a person, but this is kind of like the, you know, Drake fuzzy sweater or weird hat of generous gifts. How did it happen? There's that piece in between I don't know about. That piece between him going to Drake's studio and getting a stack of cash. Did they share stories? Did they bond that night? Did Mango Peeler share his like desires and fears about his own mortality? Did Drake suggest life insurance as an answer? It's a mystery. Can you describe what your painting looks like?
There's a floor that resembles Twister, like a Twister pattern. So it's like the red, green, yellow, blue. It looks to be in like a crooked ass room that could potentially be a gallery. There is like a little painting of a naked white woman with a pink background. And that's done in like really, really thick impasto painting.
Can you describe to me what impasto is?
Impasto. So it's like really thickly applied paint.
Okay.
And then there's this brown outline of a hand also done in impasto, and it is playing Twister with this like flat, angular outline person that is also a portrait of Drake.
It just happens to be a portrait of Drake.
Yeah, but you probably wouldn't see Drake.
Why is that?
Because so it's like the drawing of Drake in it was actually based on like a fan drawing of Drake. So I took this fan drawing off the net, the deep net, and then I turned it into like my own caricature of him. So it's like twice removed from Drake's face.
What does it look like?
So he's got like this like brown triangle, like really dark brown triangular nose, these like beady eyes that float a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He's all airbrushed. He's maybe it's like Jimmy ears, and it's like a portrait that like your mom would hang in the like family room.
So Drake is basically you playing Twister in your basement.
Maybe.
In this painting.
No, it's like I feel like I'm the hand, that like outline okay. of a hand.
Why the game of Twister?
Yeah, because I think it was just like this. It's a really intimate game. And it's like an icebreaker. And so also it was this coming together of like my world and like the world of this fictional like Drake character.
Why does this painting have a picture of Drake in it?
With that painting, it was actually one of my most honest paintings. And I was like, you know what? I am just going to like figure out a way to like include Drake in this painting. And mostly because like he represents, like I'm not mixed race, but I have this experience of being like a singular Tamil Canadian girl growing up in like Waterloo, Ontario, like a very suburban city, a very like white suburban city. And just like trying to find my identity like outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in a lot of, like, I just, like, I look to him, and I did look to him, like, you know, through my early 20s as being this guy that, like, was able to transcend whatever that burden of suburbia meant to him.
Mm-hmm.
That as, like, you know, this, like, biracial dude that grew up in Thornhill but was, like, trying to embody both, like, what Thornhill was expecting of him, what, like a suburb was expecting of him, but also, like, trying to then, like, transcend that into hip-hop, which, like, is the most, like, hyper-masculine sort of culture. I mean, his brand was to just have no fear in going back and forth between that. And so as like the heart of one of my paintings, I feel like that's sort of this culture that I'm trying to like capture.
So do you see yourself kind of mirrored in Drake's experience in a way?
It for sure. And it's funny because I talked to my especially my friends of color from Toronto, and like they do not feel the same way about Drake. And then it's like I talked to my brother about it, and like it's just like, it's like hard to understand, I think, unless you grew up in a suburb where you were not surrounded by kids that like resembled you, mm-hmm. where you were just like an outsider because of like your background. I think like at the heart of all of my work is like this idea of like hiding myself in these symbols, because I carry this baggage, this of being like, my skin is brown, my parents are Sri Lankan, but I've never been to Sri Lanka. So my interactions with the world are all based on this like baggage that and this history that I'm actually completely disconnected from and I can't really control. And so like the only way I've been able to control this existence has almost been through these paintings. Like historically speaking, painting has only really ever dealt with the brown body as its subject matter. So I'm interested in this idea of how, because I've never been back to Sri Lanka, I exoticize Sri Lanka in the same way that a person might exoticize me.
Mm-hmm.
I last year finished a commission for New Hive, and they're a series of digital paintings. And so they're sort of a mix of like GIF animations, but also just like still paintings, layers from Photoshop, basically.
Mm-hmm.
They were just more narrative based with like the falling knives, and it's like the Castane swords from the Sri Lankan flag.
Can you talk a bit about what those are?
The Castane sword off of the flag is like the most obvious symbol of like Sri Lanka and this idea of like strength and power and masculinity. And so I just kind of like playing with this sword. It's just such like an obvious symbol. I've never been able to find work that represents my experience. Like I can't go back to Sri Lankan painters. I don't see it happening in a contemporary language necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
But like bring the digital into it, and then all of a sudden I feel like my world is expanded and I can actually be anything I want.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do whatever I want, and I'm like no longer, I'm not held back by this body.
You said you don't really consider yourself a painter because you use techniques like airbrushing. I wanted to know, is the airbrush like the auto-tune of the painting world?
Maybe. Yeah. Definitely is. That's so good. Yeah.
Wait, why is that? Why do people hate the airbrush so much?
I think it has all these like kitschy connotations, like artist on the beach airbrushing like hot butts on like a t-shirt. Guys like, I mean, painting fake raindrops on their cars and stuff.
Right.
If you actually look at those shapes and those forms, they're quite beautiful. Mm-hmm. If you take them out of their context. I mean, I do push the limits of airbrush, and I also have like started introducing like a lot more brushwork.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hate to say it, guys, but I'm getting more painterly. Dun dun dun.
Turning into a painter.
Maybe.
But you were just nominated for the $25,000 RBC Painting Prize. Is that the biggest prize in Canada?
I think maybe the only.
The only? So the only painting prize.
The only, and maybe that makes it the biggest. I don't know.
So where were you when you found out?
Okay, I was at Planet Fitness. I was on the elliptical. I was listening to a Quincy Jones What It Takes podcast, and he was just talking about how his like grandmother would like cook rats. And then I got this phone call, and it was like an anonymous like Toronto number, and it was actually RBC. I was just like, oh my God, like, I can't believe this. And like people, and I was like walking back and forth. Like, I was like, whatever. I don't give a shit if anyone knows what's happening here. Do they know what I've been through for
burning
2 days?
An extra couple calories just celebrating. Yeah. So what'd your dad have to say about it?
He was like, but they chose that one. And then I could just tell that like he was like really holding back the honesty. He was just like, really? Like, I don't think anyone would ever want that painting for their house. And I'm like, Dad, that's what I'm going for.
I want my work not to sell, Dad.
Exactly.
Just banking on these prizes.
Exactly.
If you were to offer it to him, do you think he'd put it up in your house?
Definitely, because my dad is the guy that also like doesn't care about having like an ugly lawn.
Okay.
He's like that guy.
Right.
Because he's like doing
that's
more important
lowering
things.
The property values
yeah,
on the
for
street.
Everybody else.
That one standalone brown guy who's like, I won't do it.
Definitely. Because yeah. He's just like, I've got other things that are more important to do.
like encouraging my daughter's art career. That's so nice.
Yeah, for
that's
sure.
That's really nice. I'm jealous.
This is far, far from the east, my G. Far, far.
Don't forget you chose this life. Welcome to your-
say what you will about Drake, about his past, about his flow, his commitment, but there is still no denying that he spends each night sitting under the financial district in a small, lightless chamber and pedaling hard until sunrise to power our city. Drake might love our moms, but why shouldn't he? After all, it's still Drake in our space heaters, Drake keeping the cable connected, Drake iridescent, Drake on the drive home, Drake on the radio. Drake knows it all from the bottom like we'll never know our city. He's allowed to love our moms. He's earned it.
That was Emma Healy reading from Drake Loves Moms, a piece that she wrote for the website Said the Gramophone. You also heard from Geeta Thurairaja, who made a painting of Drake, Michael Peter Olson, who played cello on Drake's new album, and AC Mensa, who was a dancer in the video for Rihanna's work, featuring Drake. The songs on this episode were Camayando by Lito Pimienta, You Are Mine by Our Founders, and Paradise by Daniel Caesar. We featured these artists because we love their work, and we think you will too. You can find links to it in the show notes at canadalandshow.com/imp. The producer of The Imposter is Katie Jensen, with contributions from Lily Ames and Kevin Sexton. Original music is composed by Nathan Burley. We're on Twitter at Impster, that's I-M-P-S-T-R, and I'm on Twitter at Aaliyah Pabani, which you'll probably spell with too many A's to begin with, but you should just keep trying until you find me. I want to know what you thought of this show and what you think should be on it, so email me at Aaliyah@CanadaLandShow.com. Even though we're only one episode in, we're doing this very non-traditional thing, which is to do a live event at the Gladstone Hotel on August 3rd. Tickets are only $10 and will feature music by Bizarre, Something Funny by Jackie Pirico, and a really interesting and compelling documentary that will be performed live by Jeff Siskind. We'll be adding more guests to the bill in the next week, so keep checking. You can buy tickets on our website or at the door, but we're pretty much over 50% sold, so don't sleep on this. You're going to miss it. Our crowdfunding site is patreon.com/CanadaLand, so if you like what we do, please support us.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.